Oh,
it's
yes. Yes. And you sound so young to have so much knowledge. How wonderful, right? I mean, it sounds like that you are well-read, that you are the kind of person that makes up your own mind. And I just want to say thank you. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I'm pleased that you're the last word on this today. But thank you so much. I think that is when white people have conversations about race, they should start with white people that are closest to them and then build out from there. I'm Joanne Hardesty. I want to thank my fabulous engineer, Steve, for keeping me sounding good as always. And we'll see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Have a great, great day.
Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that Peter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning, and we're about an hour away from Air Cascadia, where today it's headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Then at 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints. Journalist Robert Perry discusses whether Syria will be caught in a proxy war between the U.S. and Russia. And Joseph Gershon of the American Friends Service Committee and KJ No, activist and writer, talk about the TPP and the Pacific Pivot. At 11 on Between the Covers, they welcome international best-selling author Elizabeth Gilbert to discuss her new book, Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, cartoonist Ted Rall returns to the KBOO studios with a new graphic biography of NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. But first, after dealing with some gnarly traffic in the morning, we've got Teresa Mitchell hosting All the News You're Not Supposed to Know on Press Watch. That's next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Call Out for Justice and the Wars. Rally and march on Sunday, October 11th, starting at 1 p.m. at Shemansky Park in Portland. Over 35 peace, environmental, police accountability, and other social justice groups from the Portland area will be mobilizing around the 14th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, with the march and rally to stop the wars overseas on the people, on human rights, and on the planet. Again, it's a call out for justice and the wars. Sunday, October 11th at 1 p.m., beginning at Shemansky Park, the South Park blocks at Salmon Street in downtown Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. got some topics. Today it's just kind of a, well, it's a topical year. If you want to talk about news stories. But I want to talk about the Second Amendment. And I want to talk with you about it. And I want to talk about climate change. And I want to talk about imperial war. First, I want to start off with something Sean King, who writes for Daily Kos, put in Alternet. He wrote, if you're not yet familiar with the term white privilege, here's your introduction. On May 17th, 2015, in Waco, Texas, 170 people were arrested after a shootout and brawl. Remember that, in which 9 people died and 20 were seriously injured. The story took over the news and was covered in an endless loop for days. Every single person who was arrested has been released. Not one person has been charged with murder. This, ladies and gentlemen, is the epitome of white privilege. Sean King writes, of the 135 people originally ordered to wear GPS ankle monitors, all but 22 have been allowed to remove them. The Waco Tribune-Herald reported Sunday their lawyers have reached agreements with prosecutors to modify the conditions of their pre-trial release. Let's now juxtapose these men who killed 9 people just a few months ago up against Kalief Browder, an African-American high school sophomore who was arrested for stealing a man's backpack. Browder languished in Rikers Island Penitentiary for 3 years without ever being charged with a crime. Brutalized throughout his time there, he committed suicide in the months after his release. Or let's consider Bobby Reed, who is serving a life sentence in prison. Life sentence for his first offense, a nonviolent drug crime. Reed was featured in a Vice documentary on prison reform, and his story begins about a minute into the documentary. White privilege is killing 9 people and all suspects being released without a charge. While Browder served 3 years after being accused of stealing a backpack, and Reed is serving a life sentence for selling drugs. So you can find that at Alternet, and I think it's a good story, and I guess sometimes you just need to tell a story. The statistics have been done over and over and over, and they don't seem to stick. It doesn't seem to matter how many times it gets repeated that, people of color, black people particularly, for example, get pulled over so many more times than white people, get searched so many more times, don't have drugs as much as white people do, and yet are filling the prisons in this police state. And so I won't do the statistics right now. I'll just say that Black Lives Matter, and this is the day, and this is the time, and this is the hour to do something about it. And speaking of time to do something about it, Alexandra Weitz writes in Nature, so much ice is piling up in the vast expanses of East Antarctica that overall it counterbalances the losses seen at glaciers thinning elsewhere on the frozen continent. It'll take decades for the Antarctic melting to overtake the mass gains and begin contributing substantially to sea level rise, a new study argues. What? What did I just say? Yeah, I'm telling you this story about ice piling up in Antarctica, which is true, because you're going to hear this from the conservatives. They're going to say, oh, there's more ice in Antarctica. And, of course, the reason there's more ice in Antarctica is because there's more snow in Antarctica, and that's because the globe is warming and there's more energy throwing more water from the ocean onto East Antarctica. But wait, the reason I'm telling you this is because, of course, the story is more complex than that. And this is going to be used for lying. So I'm telling you first, there's ice piling up in Antarctica. Well, blow it off then. Who cares? Everything's okay. No, it isn't. But let me go back to this article, which, as I was saying, is in the scientific publication Nature. Calculations are the latest in a long-running effort to weigh Antarctica's ice. Whereas melting in Greenland has dramatically reduced its ice sheet, the situation in Antarctica is more complex. Parts of Antarctica are losing mass faster than before, but large parts have been gaining mass, and they've been doing that for a very long time. That's a quote of Jay Zwally, a glaciologist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, and lead author of a paper to appear in the Journal of Glaciology. So that's the NASA connection. This is how you're going to hear it from, you know, Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and all the idiots. They're going to say that, oh, NASA says there's more ice piling up. But the scientist journalist writes, the findings do not mean that Antarctica is not in trouble. And quoting Zwally again, I know some of the climate deniers will jump on this and say this means we don't have to worry as much as some people have been making out. It should not take away from the concern about climate warming, end quote. As global temperatures rise, Antarctica is expected to contribute more to sea level rise, although when exactly that effect will kick in and to what extent remains unclear. But the work does highlight lingering uncertainties about Antarctica's ice sheets. And that's a quote of Edward Hanna, a climatologist at the University of Sheffield, UK, leader of a 2013 review that explored the difficulties in measuring ice sheets. Many earlier studies have found an overall net loss of ice from Antarctica. A 2012 review, which aimed to reconcile findings from the many techniques that are used to measure ice mass balance, calculated a loss of 72 billion tons of ice from the entire Antarctic ice sheet each year between 2003 and 2008. For roughly the same period, Zwali's team calculated a gain of 82 billion tons per year. But let's go back to January of this year. Article by the same author in Nature. Several of Antarctica's most vulnerable glaciers have already begun a runaway meltdown. The work from two studies provides some of the first detailed forecasts of how quickly glaciers are likely to disappear from a region that has long been a concern for scientists. One paper uses modeling to find that the ongoing losses, at the Thwaites Glacier have been permanently destabilizing the ice river, which drains into West Antarctica's Amundsen Sea. Yeah, the ice river. In the second study, satellite radar observations reveal that Thwaites and four neighboring glaciers have nothing to hold them back from catastrophic collapse. So they are more vulnerable than was previously thought. Catastrophic collapse, in this case, speaking for myself, means a very significant amount of sea level rise happening suddenly. Boom. Catastrophic. And then turning to Tim Radford from the Climate News Network, an article titled, Climate Change Raises Danger for Urban Heat Islands. The burning sun, however hot the weather gets, it will be worse in the cities. And the scientists in the U.S. have worked out just how much worse by measuring the notorious urban heat island effect. They planted 150 centers in and around Madison, Wisconsin, in time for the heat waves that hit the U.S. in 2012, and found that the city experienced twice as many hours at temperatures above 90 degrees Fahrenheit than the surrounding rural areas. Sealed roads and pavements, bricks, tiles, concrete, and slate all absorb heat, but densely packed cities also generate their own heat from traffic exhaust, lighting, central heating, and air conditioning. Greater investment in air conditioning will make things worse, as all the heat inside buildings will be dumped into the streets, adding to the stress. Furthermore, water, which when it evaporates cools the grass and the trees, runs off the urban pavements into subterranean drains, so cities surrender another natural cooling mechanism. You've all experienced this. Speaking for myself, it's hotter inside the town. Why is that? Well, these are the reasons. Yeah, all that concrete absorbs it, and it's drier, and as they say, returning to the article, extremes of heat are likely to become more pronounced and more frequent as global average temperatures climb in step with greenhouse gas discharges from the combustion of fossil fuels. So the crowded cities could become a serious health hazard, especially in the tropics, as temperatures stayed above 100 degrees Fahrenheit in southern Pakistan in June this year. So many died from the heat that cemeteries in Karachi ran out of space. About 65,000 people had to be treated for a heat stroke. Not only do heat waves intensify the urban heat island, but the heat island also intensifies the heat waves, which is pretty much the opposite of what you'd want. And that's a quote of Jason Schatz, an environmental researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He and research colleague Christopher Kacharik reported in Environmental Research Letters that Madison's airport recorded 39 days with temperatures higher than 90 degrees Fahrenheit in 2012. Downtown Madison, Wisconsin experienced more than 49 days of dangerous temperatures. Conversely, when a polar vortex delivered extremes of cold to the northern and eastern U.S. in the winter of 2013 and 14, Madison gained from the urban heat island effect as city dwellers experienced 40% fewer hours at below freezing temperatures. Time is 9:13. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I was reading the propaganda about the Great Middle East War this morning, and actually almost laughing, not that it isn't a grotesque and grim subject, but the U.S. and its corporate media stenographers are having a hell of a time explaining what the Russians have done and why we're supposed to believe it's all wrong. Oh heavens, they impinged on Turkish airspace, and oh look, there might be a collision between our warplanes and theirs, and we have to, and oh no, they're bombing the wrong fundamentalist oil pirates. None of this makes sense, because the whole narrative we've been given about this ISIS and this war has been a fraud from the start. You just can't have wars without lies. This one's a doozy. As I said many months ago, it's obvious that the U.S. wants to use Zbigniew Brzezinski's divide up Iraq and conquer strategy, so the Saudi Wahhabist collaborators have been allowed to fund their brethren in Syria and Iraq in order to create a Sunni Iraq that can compete with Shia Iraq and a rump Syria for oil sales. That's what it's about, of course. But that's simplistic. It's not just about oil sales. It's about a really sick tendency of people who have access to major weaponry to want to use it. And it's about a really greedy phenomenon in the U.S. around the Pentagon and all our corporations, our Lockheed and Boeing and all our war corporations. Love those profits. And that's what it's about, too, because, you know, you can hear that, oh, the strategy isn't working, or the U.S. is lost here and there, and the U.S. lost the Vietnam War, but the war profiteers didn't lose the Vietnam War. It was very profitable for them. They couldn't stand it that the U.S. went for a period of several years without starting a war. And so they created this paradigm that we now live in, starting with the invasion of, tiny Grenada to protect our strategic supply of nutmeg. And I would say cementing the deal with 9/11 so that we all believe that, oh my gosh, we're under fire. It's a threat. There's terrorism. We have to be at war. It's all a lie. So it's very handy to have smaller territories at each other's throats when one wants a continual fire sale on petroleum. And this is indeed what is happening, as Putin hinted a couple of weeks ago. So the U.S. has been holding down the Syrian Air Force in conjunction with Turkey with a no-fly zone so that ISIS can terrorize the area with pickup trucks and captured armor. And of course, armored trucks and vehicles and tanks and pickup trucks are no match for modern air power, as the U.S. ably demonstrated with the infamous Turkey shoot or road of death or whatever you want to call the massacre of Iraqi troops bugging out of Basra after the ceasefire during George the Elder's war. Tanks are great when the opposition doesn't have an air force or modern anti-tank weaponry, but aside from that, they're just too 20th century. Can't conduct a war unless you have powerful protectors with that antique stuff. Oh my goodness, I almost violated the FCC, but I didn't. Antique stuff, I say, and the U.S. knows that, and the Syrians know that, and the Russians know, but maybe the ISIS yahoos didn't know until this week. And what happened this week? The Russians, hot under the collar after Ukraine was handed over to NATO like a ripe apple, decided to call Uncle Sam's bluff. Was it difficult to defeat ISIS ever? Not by a modern military that actually intends to defeat them. So a few air sorties versus those ISIS strongholds, a few cruise missiles fired 900 miles from Russian naval assets, and kaboom, ISIS is over. 25 tanks smashed to flinders. They're running so fast they've no time to behead anyone. Their supply lines to Palmyra are bombed out. Their Chechen comrades have been severely attacked. The Syrian ambassador to Russia said that 40% of ISIS infrastructure has been destroyed. Whoops. Oh, look. And they did that in 1 week. And frankly, they did it with armament that is inferior to what the U.S. has available. Uncle Sam and the King of Saudi Arabia are pissed. You can bet this wasn't supposed to happen. The Russians are interfering with the great game, and the result could be that Assad stays in power. Evil Assad, who used to be good old Assad when he was torturing America's prisoners on behalf of the Bush the Lesser administration, that Assad. Quoting Pepe Escobar in Asia Times, everyone who knows anything about the Syrak theater knows there are no moderate rebels. And now Moscow is showing how you fight the whole Wahhabi Salafi jihadi matrix, a mix of drones, SIGINT aircraft, and on the air, on the ground, intel, of which the coalition of dodgy opportunists is sorely deprived. It's progressive, starting near the urban areas in the east and moving on to the western desert, and it will be relentless to include direct ground support to the Syrian Arab army when the recapturing of territory phase picks up, side by side with aerial support. You are leaving the American sector. Expect the information war from now on to be absolutely vicious. The neocon, neoliberal con, humanitarian, imperialist galaxy will be madly trying to sell global public opinion a monster dreaming collective. As in, Russia's evil because they bomb our rebels and, horror of horrors, kill civilians. We would never commit such unspeakable acts, end quote. Escobar wrote that last line just a couple of days before a giant American C-130 strafing aircraft spent half an hour over a hospital in Afghanistan, massacring nearly everyone in it. This is the latest version of the Vietnam War's spooky, operating in the same way, kicking over into a pivot turn so that it can circle its victims while lazily pouring thousands of rounds of incendiary ammunition into the target. And here again, its 20th century propeller-driven weapon, it would be easily shot down by modern anti-aircraft rockets. But the Afghan resistance is far too poor to afford such things, even with its expanded opium sales. Spooky is for slaughtering third world people. Let me give you a quote from Wikipedia. The Lockheed AC-130 gunship is a heavily armed, long-endurance ground attack aircraft. It carries a wide array of anti-ground-oriented weapons that are integrated with sophisticated sensors, navigation, and fire control systems. And speaking for myself, those sophisticated sensors, they are sophisticated. And they do have sound-dampening audio. They knew what they were doing. They could hear people screaming and dying. Unlike other military fixed-wing aircraft, the AC-130 relies on visual targeting. Because of its large profile and because it operates at low altitude, roughly 7,000 feet, it usually flies close air support missions at night. Now, once again, speaking for myself, 7,000 feet means that one side of the aircraft, this is not a pressurized aircraft, this is one side of the aircraft just opens up into the air, and there they are. And they hang the guns out, and you know, hose down whoever they want with these weapons. More on that stuff in a minute. Wikipedia writes it is a variant of the C-130's Hercules transport. The airframe is manufactured. This is huge. This is a huge, huge plane. Airframe is manufactured by Lockheed Martin, while Boeing is responsible for the conversion into a gunship and for aircraft support. The AC-130A Gunship 2 superseded the AC-47 Gunship 1 during the Vietnam War. This gunship's sole user is the United States Air Force, which uses AC-130U Spooky and AC-130W Stinger variants for close air support, air interdiction, and force protection. You know, and when I say stuff like air support, air interdiction, and force protection, it makes it sound all, I don't know, technical and necessary and kind of dodges from the point that this is for blasting people to bits on the ground, people who don't have anti-aircraft missiles. A couple good anti-aircraft missiles and Spooky can put out all the hash at once. But it can be shot down. It was shot down in Vietnam where they actually had some anti-aircraft guns. That's enough. Anti-aircraft weapon will shoot this thing down, especially when it's spinning around in a circle. And, well, anyway, going back to Wikipedia, weaponry is mounted to fire from the port side of the non-pressurized aircraft. During an attack, the gunship performs a pylon turn, flying in a large circle around a target, allowing it to fire for far longer than conventional attack aircraft. The upgraded AC-130U Spooky has a single 25mm GAU-12 equalizer, which is a cannon. It's limited to 1,800 rounds per minute, probably uranium. Yep. AC-130W is armed with 130mm Bushmaster cannon, AGM-176 Griffin missiles, and muscle missiles, and GBU-39 small diameter bombs. That should work pretty well against a hospital. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. So I've been talking about, well, Black Lives Matter. I've been talking about our other wars, aside from the wars on people of color. And I'm going to talk about Second Amendment in just a moment. But I want to say that there is going to be a rally, Call Out for Justice in the Wars, rally on March Sunday, October 11th, 2015. KBOO is a co-sponsor. There are many other co-sponsors, 41 of them, as of a couple of days ago. And I will be the MC there. That'll be at Shemansky Park. And let's see, that's Sunday, October 11th, 2015 at 1 p.m., it's going to be a march afterwards. Call Out for Justice, Stop the Wars Overseas on the People, on Human Rights, and on the Planet. Free Afghanistan, Iraq, and Palestine. Stop the Drones. Redirect Money for Human Needs. Support Women, Sexual Minorities, Youth, Immigrant, and Racial Justice. Resist Police Violence and State Surveillance. Stabilize the Climate. So once again, that's Sunday, this Sunday, 1 p.m. Shemansky Park. That's the South Park blocks at Salmon Street, downtown Portland. Now, I said I was going to talk about the Second Amendment, and I would talk about so-called gun rights. And I've got a different take on it. I think it's probably a take that's guaranteed to piss off just about everybody. But I want to start with the Second Amendment. And I don't need to quote it. You know what it says. That let's pull up the Second Amendment, actually. And I'll quote that in just a moment. But first I want to talk about Denmark Vesey. Denmark Vesey led a revolt. It might be Vesey, maybe that's how you say it. His name was also Telemake. He was born around 1767, and he died in 1822, probably born into slavery, according to Wikipedia, into slavery in St. Thomas, but had been a free black for over 20 years in the United States, before being accused and hanged in 1822 as a ringleader of the Rising, a major potential Charleston, South Carolina slave revolt. A skilled carpenter, Vesey had won a lottery and purchased his freedom at age 32 in 1799. He had a good business and a family, but was unable to buy his first wife, Beck, and her children out of slavery. They were very valuable, therefore expensive. Vesey became very active in the Second Presbyterian Church. In 1818, he was among the founders of an AME church in the city, which was supported by white clergy in the city and rapidly attracted 1,800 members, making this the second largest AME congregation in the nation. In 1820, he is alleged to be the ringleader of a planned slave revolt. Vesey and his followers were said to be planning to kill slaveholders in Charleston, liberate the slaves, and sail to the Black Republic of Haiti for refuge. Now, this is what the founding fathers were terrified of. Absolutely terrified, because there were so many people stolen from Africa, and their numbers increased by intentional breeding of human beings. Isn't that just a lovely phrase? Breeding of human beings was just as ugly as you can possibly imagine it to be. Setting up the first tier of wealth in this country, and the Second Amendment says, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. What were they talking about? Well-regulated militia. Who stopped Denmark Vesey? Exactly. Who was supposed to stop Denmark Vesey? The well-regulated militia. White guys with guns. And the reason the Second Amendment is there in the United States Constitution is the same reason that we have the phrase three-fifths of a human being also in the United States Constitution, because the United States was founded on the wealth brought by the importation and the working to death and the breeding of human beings from Africa. And the Second Amendment was created so that white people would always have their guns out available to intimidate and slaughter black people. The Second Amendment is about white supremacy. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and CT is on the air.
Yes, good morning. You kind of shifted the conversation to a whole nother issue that...
That's okay, you can go back to one I talked about before.
Okay, well, all of what you're saying obviously is very important and detail-oriented. But the mere fact that native original people on the North America continent are the real position, and talking about what is being coined as a race war, such as continental Africans being imported, not by any Americans, but, you know, it would be helpful if you would maybe direct exactly who is doing what, like you were talking about with the ISIS and everything like that. That was what I was picking up on. But the escalation of violence is actually, you know, if you really looked at it, it's coming from British Empire subjects all over the planet that are occupying the North America continent, and now within this isolated, you know, boundary of the Americas. And the word U.S. or United Citizens are the words and terminology that I use to twist in the legal fiction to give authority to those that have no care about any of us, any American whatsoever. The same play that has been going on against the original people before the problems of Europe start to come over here. You know, it's not two persons a long time ago thought this up, but it's the compounding incompetency and criminal intent where real estate is what's being stamped upon the earth. And the people that are now selling out by putting debt on buildings that were built on this earth here on the North American continent, which is not an island, or it's a very large island that's occupied. Anyway, these are the things that actually do it. 458 million people that were listed as British subjects, not from England, over a couple of decades ago was where I got that one count. That would explain the diversity of pigmentation on the skin. There are no white people or black people, but those terminologies are being used to misdirect the real issue of the problem as if we at
well, yes, white isn't a reality, it's a status.
Tolerate violence
of any nature. If we were to have a conversation, then I think there should be some back and forth. I mean, I think you were making some great points there. But
that's all I'm seeming needing to be doing is asking that if you would please use your great intelligence and your voice to kind of remove these inflammatory terminology, such as there was no civil war anywhere west of the Mississippi. When it really gets down to it, the political intrigue of whether your servants, which were indentured servants that were brought to a place which may have been royals or not, you know, that didn't happen over the entire North America continent. But the alliance and the allocation of certain lands to certain native tribes in this faux pas of, oh, you can be a lord over that area until we come along with greater troops and, you know, remove you.
Okay. Well, I think you've made
right
some great
now,
points. And
water,
I'll actually go to another caller. Thanks. I mean, let me be more plain. For the sake of radio, your style there is a little lengthy. And I would like to be able to discuss some of your points, but that doesn't seem to be forthcoming. So it's the style, you understand, that I'm having a little difficulty with. So I'm going to go on to the next caller. But before I do, I'll tell you that you're listening to KBOO Portland, and I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this is Press Watch. And the number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Just when so many points flow past, it's, of course, difficult to address them. But one point, if I understood it correctly, was talking about slavery being principally in the eastern seaboard. Well, Oregon was a territory later defined as a state, but when it was a black exclusion state, and it's right there in the Oregon Constitution that blacks are to be excluded, and it's just as ugly as you can think that it would be. Once again, the number to call, 503-231-8187, and I haven't mentioned it lately, but the engineer for this show is Rock, and Rock is just amazingly competent, and I appreciate what you do, Rock. Thank you very much. And Gary, or Jerry, he's trying to tell me, is coming up next. It's Gary.
Hi, Teresa. This is Gary. I just want to tune in on the idea of the Second Amendment.
All right.
I called you before about this. It's called the Stono Rebellion. It was on September 9th of 1739. There was a bunch of blacks that rebelled, and they went down the roads crying, "Liberty, liberty." They wanted to be free and everything. Well, the white slave owners didn't like that. And so they formed this bunch of guys together to go and kill the slaves. And basically, that's exactly what they did. They killed
Cato's Rebellion.
Pardon me?
Cato's Rebellion.
Stono Rebellion.
Also known as Cato's Conspiracy or Cato's Rebellion, but go ahead.
Okay. And this is the reason why the Second Amendment to form this militia was formed. It wasn't to fight off the British or fight off anybody else. It was to protect the slave owners. The Stono Rebellion, again, September 9th, 1739, I believe it was.
Right on. It's a STONO, Stono Rebellion, and you're exactly right, of course, and thanks for bringing that up.
Okay. Don't you bring that up. I just wanted to reiterate that.
Right on. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, that's the point I'm trying to make here is that, and for years I didn't look into it. I thought that the Second Amendment was there so that there would be some counterbalance of intimidation against the government. But I have this to ask against...
No. That's not what it was for. It was formed in the South.
Yeah. I have this to ask about gun owners, and it's complex. I said that I was going to piss off everyone, and I probably will. I own a rifle. I'm willing to give up my rifle when the police give up their pistols, basically. I think that our constabulary should learn how to deal with the population to help to protect and serve as they write on their police cars without weaponry. And, if the Japanese police can do it, our police can. It's just an entirely different way of looking at things. And I think that the entire United States would be much less violent if we, I think we should stop selling guns. I don't think we can confiscate guns because I think it's just logistically impossible and make everyone madder in hell, especially the white guys who think they were being put upon already.
Right.
And,
and since we're paying the police, why don't we put to serve and protect back on their doors so that that's exactly what they do?
Yeah. Well, that's the idea. And what I'm saying here is let's embrace complexity. We've become a very violent society. It's certainly in our video games. When I was looking up that stuff about the C-130 strafing gunship, what a horror that is, I found out that there's a video game. I'm sorry?
I've seen it. I was in Vietnam. I'm a Vietnam veteran, Purple Heart, all that stuff and everything. And they used to tip these planes on the side and just go, and each one of those times they did that, it would fire something like 3,000 or 6,000 rounds per minute.
Yeah, 1,800 rounds a minute.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Crazy.
And you can, what I was going to say is that there's a video game where you can, pretend you're on the gunship. And actually, soldiers who are on the gunships, I'm not putting them down, they think these things are great. I'm not saying that they think it's necessarily great to slaughter people. Maybe some of them do.
But
you get on the thing, and it's got all this weaponry, and I'm sure when you're training, it is just absolutely fun to blast things away. But another side point I want to add to that is they were probably shooting uranium. We'll find out someday.
That I'm not sure of, but I was on the ground and I saw what happened, and it is not pretty at all.
No, I mean, this thing, the idea that it was a mistake is a little absurd to me because of the nature of this device.
It was another
device,
lie, just because, like Iraq, because the Gulf of Tonkin really never happened.
Well, yeah, and, I'm supposed to believe that look on Google Maps, find your own house, and tell me the military doesn't have 10 times better Google Maps of that hospital and everything else in that town in Afghanistan. They didn't know that that was a hospital, even after Doctors Without Borders told them it was a hospital and gave them the exact coordinates and had been operating the hospital for years, and that they didn't know that there was no... I mean, like I was saying, there's all kinds of sensors and certainly sound that would tell the people in the C-130... who are obviously told to go destroy that thing, that they were destroying a hospital. I mean, that is not credible. That
absolutely
is not believable. So
you're absolutely correct on that. The military does have better spy satellites, and they can do exactly that.
Yeah, and that machine, that AC-130, has incredible spy equipment on it. Well, thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
The number to call, 503-231-8187. I was pointing out that the Second Amendment was created to put down Black people, and earlier caller was talking out that there was speaking that there was, of course, a more complex situation than that, and that it was doubtless used against Native Americans as well, although whole armies were raised and maintained for that purpose. The main thing for the militia was to keep the vast numbers of slaves in check and to put down rebellions, and that is the energy that has been brought forth into today, and that's why a white guy can put a machine gun on the back, on a strap on his back, and walk down the street with several other white guys and get away with it. And that's why the Black Panthers, who obeyed all the rules for open carry when they started their thing, were targeted, shot up, assassinated, and all that stuff that happened under COINTELPRO and under police aggression. It's a black and white thing, and the Second Amendment is about white supremacy. And number to call, 503-231-8187. And Deanna is on the air.
Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
I listen to your show as often as I can. I think it's extraordinary. And the reason I'm calling is because I feel concerned that from what I, as I heard it, you perhaps lost patience with the caller who had a long number of points to make, it's true, and with the way that she was doing it. However, I just want to say I think it would have probably, I wish you'd been able to find another way to have a conversation with her, and I hope that you'll consider in the future that not everybody's going to present it the way you want it, and that you do a lot of stream. Here's a fact, here's a fact, here's a fact, here's a fact, and here's a conclusion. And we listen to that, and I really like it. I just wish that you would consider perhaps you shouldn't have cut her off, and I hope you'll invite her on the air to come back on and actually be able to have a conversation with you. Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, are you still there? Okay, well, actually, I do want to have a conversation, and so... you know, I'm not saying she can't call back. And as I was saying, she was making some great points. But also, as I was saying, I don't think that makes good radio when you can't address the points and have a conversation. And that's a different way of looking at things. That's about control. It's like I want to control the discourse to some degree. And it's a little ugly sometimes when you get right down to the point of it. But I'm thinking of doing a radio show in a certain way. I want to make some points. I have, in this case, I have an hour to do it. And so when people call in, and I hope that you will call in at 503-231-8187, I don't want you to do the circular breathing thing, okay? And the problem with that stream of consciousness, if you're calling to make a dialogue like that, it turns into a monologue instead of a dialogue. Points go past that I can't address because there's too many of them. I thought I should make notes for that kind of caller and just, you know, make a list of each point. But then I would have this list, and that still wouldn't be quite a dialogue. So I ask you to bear that in mind, as most people do. And I'm not mad about that. I just don't think it's good radio to have that format. So instead, I ask for a back and forth. And you can make 2-3 points, sure, but then take a breath, and I'll talk about, you know, what you said, and we'll see, you know, what we can share between ourselves on that. 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. I've been talking about Black Lives Matter. I've been talking about the fact that the U.S. is at war in great numbers and with vast expense, with its several hundred military bases around the world, creating a gigantic and super dangerous war in the Middle East, is utterly hypocritical about the fact that the Russians have come out and wiped out ISIS. We'll find that out in the next couple of weeks. You'll find out how weak ISIS is now. And by doing so, the Russians have, they've called out the U.S. They've said, by doing this, what they've said is, oh, you say this isn't your group, ISIS, and that you're having such trouble defeating them, and oh, they're so dodgy, and oh, look, we came out with some aircraft and some cruise missiles and wiped them out. What do you say now? Because the Russian military is impressive, but it's nothing. It is nothing. Look at the money. Look at the training. Look at the efficiency. The U.S. military is vastly superior. Boy, I hate hearing myself say that. It's true, though. I mean, they're damn good soldiers, and it's amazing equipment. The best that money can buy, the best that more than you can imagine money can buy with the latest technology. The Russians can't keep up with that, but all they had to do was apply some real air power, and poof, no ISIS. I mean, they're not completely wiped out. They're about half wiped out now after a week. And James is on the air. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Hi, James.
Hello. So that caller who made the stream of points there,
yeah.
I thought it was funny that she called you inflammatory, because, I mean, if anybody ever listens to your show, they would know first and foremost that you're pretty inflammatory.
Oh, yeah, this is polemics. I'm trying to be inflammatory.
Yeah, but I think more importantly, I think people need to get flared up about something. You got a whole bunch of cold folks out here watching all this police violence and military domination in other countries, and everybody's just kind of like, whatever.
Well, I can't blame people for just wanting to get by. I mean, that's the urge that, you know, that drives me most of the time, frankly. You know, I'm just trying to do a blue-collar job and get by. But We've got some real problems.
I think, you know, it's like the society that we have now, it's like it's basically designed to drive the passion and the passion and the imagination out of people.
This war propaganda is doing it brilliantly. This is the most amazing mind control propaganda state that has ever existed, in my opinion, because it requires far less intimidation and violence, although there's a great deal of violence, and this is a police state with the biggest prison population of anywhere. This is a police state, and yet the amount of intimidation necessary to create this sort of conformity is less than it would be, because the mind control is astonishing. And one of the ways they do it is by confusing you. And that's what you get if you look at the mainstream media, if you look at the corporate-owned media, and you try to figure out what's going on in Syria, it'll just confuse the hell out of you.
Yeah, totally. But I just want to tell you that I appreciate what you do, and I think regardless of whether or not people want to call you inflammatory, folks need to get flared up about something. I'm glad that you're out there getting folks flared up about something. So thank you so much, Teresa.
Okay, well, thanks for the boost. Yeah, sure, I'll take inflammatory. That'll work. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Speaking of inflammatory, there is a march and rally, a rally and march. It's going to be Sunday. It's going to be downtown Portland. And if you're not from Portland, it's pretty easy to get to. Just go to where you see all the buildings and bridges and go over to the southwest side and go to Salmon Street in the park blocks. And that's Szymanski Park, a little park. And there's going to be 35 peace, environmental, police accountability, and other social justice groups from the Portland area and around Oregon and southwest Washington mobilizing around the 14th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan. 14 years. And still at war. And once again, I don't care what they say, it's still at war. I mean, that's a war. And I guess maybe it's not properly a war even, but it's an invasion and occupation. And there's a march and rally on Sunday, call out for justice in the wars. Organizers have laid out a clear set of issues related to the event's theme. Call out for justice, stop the wars overseas on the people. Stop the wars on human rights. Stop the wars on the planet. Stop the wars on the people. Free Afghanistan, Iraq, and Palestine. Stop the drones. Redirect money for human needs. Support women, sexual minorities, youth, immigrant, and racial justice. Resist police violence and state surveillance. And stabilize the climate. In other words, an outbreak of democracy is likely to happen. However large or small, it's going to happen Sunday at Szymanski Park. And I will be the MC, which means I get to go up on the stage and introduce some of the speakers, and I'm really looking forward to that and hope that some of you can turn up. Time is 9:46. You're listening to KBOO Portland. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. And I'm interested. I thought that I could light up the phone lines by saying the Second Amendment is about white supremacy. I thought, oh, that'll get them. No, I guess the audience is different. This is a different era. Maybe I'm thinking 10 years ago. It happens when you get old, you know. Everything. I mean, I think my theory on this is that because I'm this old, then everything is, every year is 1/57th of my life. Now, when I was 6 years old, a year was 1/6th of my life, right? So by proportion, a year seemed like a hell of a long time. 1964 was so long. And now it flies by. So I think it's, things change. And maybe I made that kind of a mistake, but that's a good thing. If it's true that I can come out and say, and I'm going to say it again, the Second Amendment is about white supremacy. Hello. Number to call with your comments and questions. If I can say that and the phone lines don't light up with angry people, then one of two things has happened. Either there's a hell of a lot of people who agree with me, or the right wingers gave up a long time ago, or maybe both. I don't know. I don't know how that works. But I just want to point that out. And when we're talking about gun rights, my opinion is that this is a lot of hooey, and it's really about white supremacy. Handguns are not going to promote a revolution. If there's going to be a revolution with handguns, we should have had it a long time ago. Hello, handgun owners. Where's our revolution? I mean, my God, we've got a police state where 7% of the population is either on parole, on probation, or in prison or in jail. 7%. In some sort of trouble with the law. The police are so arrogant these days that they habitually slam you to the ground face first and put their knees on your necks. That used to be El Salvador stuff. That used to be death squad stuff. People used to say, thank God we don't live in a fascist country like that. Well, you do now. So where's the revolt? Where's the 300 million handguns when you need them, huh? I mean, hell, if all the handgun owners just came out on a certain day and said, we don't want fascist oppression anymore, and we don't want a police state, and we don't wars, and fired all their handguns into the air at noon on that day, I think that would make a point. It'd also make a hell of a mess when all those bullets came down. I'm just using that metaphorically, but there's been no rebellion because it's not handgun ownership is not about resisting the government. You want to resist the government, if you want to violently resist the government, there are ways to do it. I'm not the expert. I don't know exactly how that might be done. But we can see in history that it's taken, people have gone around, when they need to overthrow the government, like in Cuba, they steal artillery pieces. They steal tanks. Sure, it can be done. Any weapon that can be used against you can be taken and be used against your oppressor. But the handguns haven't been. The handguns are about white fear of black people. The Second Amendment is about white supremacy. Always has been. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And Chuck's on the air.
Hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Am I on?
Yep, you're on.
Oh, my comment was I wanted to make a note about the shooting in Roseburg.
Yeah.
And all the outpouring of grief and angst and everything and over that shooting. And I think it was the same day we bombed a hospital in Syria and killed children and people in ICUs and doctors and everything. And that was just kind of shrugged off like, oh, it was an accident or maybe it was their fault.
Yeah, and listening to BBC and NPR and checking the print media, you can see endless excuses. And first and foremost, the Pentagon excuses and diversions and demurrals. And I think it's kind of disgusting. I think it's very disgusting, actually.
Yeah, the president kind of made a speech about the shooting in Roseburg and how awful it was but there wasn't anything about this horrible thing that happened in Syria that was our fault. Our government killed those people.
Yeah, and it would appear with malice aforethought. And I would guess at some policy level that was done to say to Doctors Without Borders that you are not allowed to have your attitude of being in occupied territory and repairing the bodies of Taliban as well as American supporters. That's what they did. I've seen that attitude over and over. For example, here in Portland, when Brandon Mayfield was accused of putting his fingerprint magically on a bomb somewhere in Spain?
Oh, right, yeah.
It was impossible. Yeah. No one who actually knew the facts ever believed that was true. That was a propaganda effort that was directed against him because he defended Muslim activists.
Like a lynch mob formed immediately.
Yeah, that's what that was about. And so I don't believe the excuses. But thank you very much for your call. Number to call 503-231-8187. It's 9:52. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, and Farrell's on the air.
Hey, Teresa.
Hey.
Hey, I'm a KBOO member. I listen every week to you, and I'm just wondering, you're talking about the police state, and I'm wondering how taking guns away from the American public will solve that problem.
Well, I think that the gun industry should be shut down and we shouldn't sell them. I think that it's impractical to confiscate guns. I think that the state that we live in is utterly corrupt and must be overthrown.
Sir.
I would prefer by a peaceful method, but as I was saying, the handguns haven't done it. If there was going to be a handgun revolution, there are plenty of handguns around for the last 30 years to do that, and it should have been done. So where's the revolution?
I guess I think that's a whole nother conversation. I'm just wondering how confiscating guns will stop a fascist state. I think
now be careful because you're setting up a straw man there. You're saying confiscating guns, and I'm not.
Oh, okay. I'm not. I'm just trying to understand a little better.
Okay, so, I'm saying don't sell them. Don't sell the guns, and let's have a different society. Let's disarm the police.
Right. Okay. I see. Okay. Well, I don't necessarily disagree, so I'll let you continue.
Well, I appreciate you calling in though, because under this under these circumstances, when I say, let's stop selling guns, and you know, I can follow with anything. I followed with disarming the police, but most people will hear confiscate the guns.
Right.
And then
okay,
there's this,
well,
and then there's this imaginary. Yeah. So that's it's great that you called in.
Right. Okay. Okay, Teresa, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. See how it works? I mean, it's funny. That's how propaganda works, too. It's like, in a sense, once you get enough ideology, once you get enough ideation out in the population, there's a mental force. There's a visual idea. And when I say stop selling guns, think about what happened visually in your brain just then when I said that. Don't you imagine uniformed people busting into your house to see if you have guns? I mean, I don't want that scenario, which is why I'm saying the police must be disarmed. And I think that disarming the police will dial down the violence generally. That will help. It won't do it by itself. I think it'll dial it down. And also, I want to be more specific. When I say disarm the police, I mean that there should be a general protocol of going around without handguns, certainly without handguns. And the police should be trained to deal with handgun situations differently. They should have a rack of rifles, sure. Absolutely. For people who are, you know, doing the shoot 'em up thing, trying to be, you know, Cagney at the window with his handgun, right? You'll never get me, coppers. People doing that stuff, that's in people's heads too. So that's going to have to be dealt with. But I mean, there are police forces that are not armed. And in those countries, there are far fewer deaths from firearms. Certainly people would not be able to commit suicide by cop nearly as easily if the cops were not going around with guns. And there are ways to deal with it. If you look on the web, there are ways to disarm people who confront you with a handgun. A handgun, you can certainly shoot across the street and down the alley with a handgun, but mostly it's used point blank. And there are countermeasures for that. And as I say in my proposal, you know, the cops would have a rack of rifles if they really needed it. Most of the time, imagine this, the cops could be disarmed, and I really think that should happen. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Erica's on the air.
Hi, am I on?
Yeah.
Hi. I just want to go back to your original point talking about the Second Amendment being white supremacist. And I think if you look at the history of the amendment, if you look back to things like Bacon's Rebellion, where European colonists in the 13 colonies, they were given the right to bear arms after the landlords put down a rebellion by white colonists and black indentured servants.
Well, that's interesting because you're the second caller to bring that up after I brought it up, which tells me that the population generally with KBOO is better informed on this than I would have guessed, and it's very encouraging. So yeah, mm-hmm. Denmark Vesey's revolt was put down by the militia. The Stono Rebellion was put down with the militia, and the militia was put into, and the Second Amendment was put into the Constitution because the slave owners were concerned that they needed organized groups with ready arms to keep black people from getting their freedom.
And even beyond that, just the fact that it was it was a cookie given to white colonists so that they wouldn't organize with black slaves anymore. And you can see that in, like, you know, the Black Panthers. Anytime that a black person tries to exercise the Second Amendment, it's considered a revolutionary act.
That's exactly what I was saying earlier. And once again, I find that encouraging that you call in and say that. Yes, I think that tell more people that.
I will try.
Good.
It can't be said often enough.
Okay.
And that's really all I wanted to call in and say.
Okay.
So thank you for spreading that message.
Right on. Okay, thanks for calling in. The time is 9:57. Coming up at 10 o'clock, we got, I believe, unless I'm mistaken here, I'm looking at the engineer, Flashpoints is coming up right at 10 o'clock. Air Cascadia has come up at 10 o'clock, so I was wrong about that. Okay, so stay tuned because Air Cascadia is coming up, and you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. The main points, once again, the Russians have shown the U.S. hand by wiping out ISIS. And that's my prediction. You'll find out in the next couple of weeks just how badly they wiped out ISIS. And it proves that the whole ISIS thing was, as I and other commentators have been saying, a setup intended to divide Iraq to create a Sunni Iraq that was answerable to Saudi Arabia and which would compete with Shia Iraq and with Siraq, the rump Syrian state, to sell oil and provide an ongoing war situation and destabilization so that the Pentagon and its suppliers can continue to be rich and famous and profitable and sick. That's what it's about. And I've been saying the Second Amendment is about white supremacy. Look it up. And you've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM on our main transmitter, standing above the Portland skyline and other frequencies elsewhere in Cascadia, Air Cascadia coming up. Listen to KBOO.FM, where we transmit to all the ships at sea.
Yes, you are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Just 1 minute in front of 10 o'clock, we're about 15 minutes away from flashpoints. Today, journalist Robert Perry discusses whether Syria will be caught in a proxy war between the U.S. and Russia. And Joseph Gerson of the American Friends Service Committee and KJ No, activist and writer, talk about the TPP and the Pacific Pivot. And at 11 on Between the Covers, today they welcome international best-selling author Elizabeth Gilbert to discuss her new book, Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. And then at 11:30, it's Words and Pictures, where cartoonist Ted Rall returns to the KBOO studios with a new graphic biography of NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. That all comes up after Air Cascadia. It's headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre, next on KBOO.
2, 3, 4. KBOO Community Radio is proud to present A Hard Day's Night as part of the KBOO at the Clinton Monthly Film Series. The Beatles made this film in 1964 as they portray a rock and roll band traveling from Liverpool to London for a television broadcast, and wackiness ensues. Again, that's A Hard Day's Night, Thursday, October 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.